Welcome back to The Takeaway. It's Todd Zwillick with you today. Earlier this month, officials in Vietnam crushed and burned more than $7 million in ivory and rhino horn. It was all part of an effort to deter the black market sale of ivory and try to devalue those tusks. Still, demand hasn't subsided. Between 2010 and 2012, an estimated 100,000 elephants were killed illegally. And according to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, an elephant is killed for its tusks every 15 minutes. A single pound of ivory can fetch $1,500 on the black market, sometimes more. And most of that market is in China. A new film from executive producer Leonardo DiCaprio called The Ivory Game depicts the underbelly of ivory trafficking. It's a dramatic new documentary. It goes undercover in Africa and China into the lives and activities of intelligence operatives, undercover activists, and frontline rangers. Directors Keith Davidson and Richard Lonkani say the poaching isn't isolated to specific countries in East Africa. Poachers are moving their way westward toward Tanzania and other countries as well.
Yeah, it's actually like a whole wave. Like Central Africa is hardest hit. Like we've lost up to 80-90% of populations in Central Africa. When we started filming, the wave was going through East Africa, Kenya and Tanzania, moving south. That was what we were following around, watching them fight back with everything they had. But as we progressed in the filming, the poachers started moving towards Southern Africa, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Botswana. So what we're seeing is a big circular wave that is just kind of wiping out the elephants.
Keith, we're basically talking about China here, right, as the market, effectively. Is that right?
Correct.
How big is the illicit market in China? And describe that, because part of the market is legal, most of it's illegal, and that's where a lot of the loopholes in black market comes into play here.
Yeah, I mean, there's 95% of the ivory that's killed, elephants killed, ultimately make their way through China specifically. So there's still a huge demand for ivory. Not everyone knows this, but ivory is mainly used for art. It's a status symbol. So intricate carvings, and this is, has been going on for generations. It's really a status symbol of the wealthy, the upper class. But, it's a problem that we do see some hope in. There's been some, drastic developments this year. China has said that they will ban ivory. They just haven't given a date yet. And until a date is given, then there's a lot of unknowns.
Now, one of the characters, Richard, in your story is a young man named Hong, who's Chinese. Kind of a remarkable character in your story. One of the people, as Keith describes, a young person in China who sees something wrong in this situation. Who is Hong?
Hong is just this amazing character that we found very early on in the production. And he was just starting out to become an investigator and he wanted to make a difference. So when we met him, he hadn't been involved in any dangerous operations, but he volunteered to this other guy that we met who was running a lot of operations across Africa to fight poachers and traffickers. And he needed someone like Hong, a Chinese who was willing to go meet dangerous criminals, traffickers who were also dealing with drugs and arms trade, and pose as a buyer so that they could arrest these people. So Hong for us was amazing because he's Chinese and he stands for all these Chinese that we point our fingers at and say, you're bad people. But he says, look, I'm Chinese and I'm fighting this and I'm risking my life and I want the world to see that Chinese are also fighting back.
Local criminals, they seldom suspect me because unfortunately, they just never imagine like a Chinese could be on the right side of the ivory and rhino horn battle. So I realized, oh, this time I can make some difference. I can be part of the change makers.
For us, it was amazing to watch him over the course of 1.5 years progress and become this like fearless, amazing investigator that brought unbelievable evidence to the film, but also for the cause of high-level traffickers being involved, even government being involved.
Part of the backdrop, Richard, of this film, of course, are humans destroying elephants, but then also battles between different factions of humans. Those trying to protect the elephants, there are local farmers who just want to protect their families and their crops, and elephants might trample them. Of course, there are international poachers. There are governments. Not all of the humans are on the same side. And I wonder if you got any sense or if any of your subjects had the sense that elephants have a sense that some humans are on their side, many humans are a mortal threat.
Yeah, I mean, they're very intelligent and they understand who's approaching them. Like, for example, when you approach an elephant in a car that the elephant doesn't know, he will be very fearful and also aggressive towards that car. They recognize you from miles away. They can smell you. So, you know, it really depends who's getting close to them. And the village people that hate elephants are the ones that are affected by crop raiding. When the elephants come in and eat all their supplies like watermelons and potatoes and corn, and they hate them because they, you know, they take away their livelihoods.
You look at any one of those people and you know they could kill an elephant for sure. And killing an elephant is a real short step to becoming a full-blown poacher.
Someone shot an elephant over there and they thought they saw one and they run to go and kill it.
You guys ready to run? We've got to catch before they cross the road. Follow me. Keep coming.
You know, we also need to look at the broader picture and fencing and all these solutions that come after we can stop the poaching. What do we do with these elephants roaming the wild and approaching villages?
There are many scenes in your film where the undercover footage is in boutique, retail, ivory shops in China, in Beijing or Hong Kong, all over China, hundreds of them. Why isn't the Chinese government raiding these shops, confiscating the inventory and publicly burning it?
Ivory was technically banned in 89. So the problem is there's a lot of shops that are doing very illegal things. They have certificates with the amount of, you know, they have a certain number of tons of ivory that they're allowed to sell. But what they're doing is that they're mixing illegal ivory with the supposed legal ivory. Right now, we're at a crucial moment. And this film really is the most urgent film that we've done, because we're at this point where China, since they have said we will ban the ivory trade, you know, the message needs to get out there and they need to ban it, and they need to ban it quickly. Because if they say, like Hong Kong did, there was another thing that happened this year. Hong Kong said, we're going to ban ivory in 5 years. 5 years from now, half the elephant population will be gone. So China needs to come forth and say, we're going to ban it, and we're going to ban it immediately.
The film The Ivory Game comes out at a moment of urgency for the population of African elephants, as tons and tons of ivory still pour out of Central and Southern Africa towards China. Richard Latkani and Keith Davidson are the directors of The Ivory Game. Gentlemen, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
The Ivory Game is available now on Netflix.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.